All right, so we're continuing on our series in Joshua. This morning we're looking at chapter 3 and chapter 4. But I want to ask, have you ever had a time when you've reaped the consequences of being forgetful? A time when you've, oh no, that happened because I was forgetful. Now, one of Australia's favourite pastimes is to go fishing or skiing. Where I would go skiing, I don't like fishing, sorry Brian, where Brian is. I don't like fishing, but I like skiing. And we used to go skiing in the Murray River quite regularly during summer. Now, to get the boat into the Murray River, it was a bit of a process. You had a boat loading ramp. You'd have to reverse your car down there or ute down there with a trailer on. You had to give it a couple of goes going back and forth to make sure you get it into the water. You eventually get the trailer into the water to a point when the boat sort of just lifts off the trailer. Then a person usually hops into the boat and another person drives off and they park the vehicle, jump in their boat, go skiing, go fishing, whatever it is they want to do. Now, one day we were lined up ready to go in. We were watching this other family loading their $30,000 ski boat into the Murray River. They did the job well. The person got their vehicle down there in one go. Good effort. They got there. The boat just lifted off the trailer. Another person hopped into the boat. They pushed it out into the water. The vehicle drove up and stopped. And we watched and we watched. They did a terrific job. They did everything right. Until the boat started to sink. A person went back to their vehicle. They come back holding on to this little plug, a little boat plug. You see, they did everything right. They got the boat in the water. They reversed up really well, but they forgot one thing, the little boat plug. Now, if they had have remembered this one thing, a $20 piece, they would have still had their $30,000 boat. But instead, it sunk to the bottom of the Murray River. Forgetfulness can be costly. Now, we all know what it's like to be forgetful. We're people. We know what we do and how often we do forget. And in the endeavour to not forget, we come up with ways to not forget. We have our yearly planners. We have special notice things that go to our phones. We have diaries. We have lists. We have all these things to help us so we don't forget. Now, for myself, what I usually do, at the start of the year, I go and buy a diary, start off with good intentions. I've got a diary, it's going to be a good year, I'm going to remember stuff. And in my diary, I have four events that I have to put in there, that if I forget these events, I'm in big trouble. The first three are birthdays, Bethany's, Ben's and Julie's birthday. I've got to remember them ones. And the last one is my wedding anniversary. You see, if I forget those events, well, there'll be consequences. Oh, we're in big, big trouble if I forget those events. Now, I'm sure if any of you guys have ever forgotten wedding anniversaries, you know what it's like. The consequences of forgetting. Now, this morning, as you turn to Joshua chapter 3 and chapter 4, it's like the author hits the slow motion button. It's as if you're reading through and everything just slows down. Not much happens in chapter 3 and chapter 4, except they get from one side of the Jordan to the other. It takes two chapters to tell it. And it repeats itself again and again and again as you read through those couple of chapters. There's a reason why it's so slow. See, the Lord is about to perform a miracle at the Jordan, and he wants his people to remember it. He wants his people to slow down and remember this miracle that he's about to do. See, in Joshua 3, we have the Jordan miracle. We have a miracle at the Jordan River. Then in chapter 4, we're forced to reflect upon that miracle. In chapter 3, it's narrative. Chapter 4 is application. Chapter 3, we're told about what the Lord is doing. And then chapter 4 is instructions in how to live in light of what the Lord has done. So as you turn to chapter 3 and chapter 4, we're going to be asking, what does God want us to slow down and think about? What is it that the Lord takes time to tell us to do? What he takes time to tell us what he's done? So as you turn to chapter 3, we see firstly the Jordan River miracle. So as I said, it's a slow story, these ones, chapter 3 and chapter 4, and it's slow for a reason. It starts off in verse 1 of chapter 3. It says, "Early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out from Shittim and went to the Jordan, where they camped before crossing over." Now, last week, if you were with me, you remember in Joshua chapter 2, spies went into Jericho, and now they've made it back. And they told Joshua that all the people in Jericho, in Canaan, they're melting with fear. They're all worried about these Israelites who are camped over the other side of the Jordan. So you can imagine with an air of confidence, Joshua and the Israelites set off, and they set up camp at the Jordan River. They all might be confident they're going to be able to go in and take the land, but they're all thinking the same question. How are we going to cross this Jordan? How are we going to get through it? You see, a bit of information about the Jordan here. See the Jordan? It's, see how long there? You can use this pointer, the Jordan River. The Jordan River starts up here about Mount Hermon, and it flows all the way down to the Dead Sea. Now, the Jordan River, it flows from, so as I said, from Hebron, then a lake called Lake Huleth, then the Sea of Galilee, then the Dead Sea. Now, Jordan means descender, and that's exactly what the Jordan does. You can see the numbers I've got up there. It starts off at 2,600 metres above sea level at Mount Hermon, then Lake Huleth, it's about 70 metres above sea level, then Sea of Galilee, 250 metres below sea level, and then eventually at the Dead Sea, 400 metres below sea level. See, within about 170 kilometres, the Jordan River goes from 2,600 metres above sea level to 400 metres below sea level. Now, on average, the Jordan would have been about 30 metres wide. It varied from 1 to 3.5 metres deep, and it's in flood. So you can understand their question. How are we going to get across this Jordan? You see, earlier, chapter 2, two fully grown men, they got across. But now they have children, elderly, men, women, livestock, possessions. How on earth are you going to get these from one side of the Jordan River to the other side of the Jordan River when it's flooding? How will you do it? My mates and myself, one of the things we do regularly is go for swims in the Murray River. Now, we knew that the Murray River was a dangerous river to go swimming in because it had a really strong current. And underneath the water, because it was all muggy and that, you couldn't see underneath the water. And we knew underneath the water there were all these snags. Now, that's not sausages. That's things you can get caught upon and people would drown. We knew about this because you'd hear on the news time after time, this person drowned in the Murray River. See, when we go swimming in the Murray, we knew it was dangerous because of the current and because of the snags. And now God's people face the Jordan. How will they get through it? Well, they need a miracle. They need a miracle to get through this river because it's raging. It's at flood time. It's a fair steep, pretty steep from Hermon all the way down to the Dead Sea. They need a miracle. And that's exactly what we see in verses 14 to 17. We're told, so when the people broke camp to cross the Jordan, the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of them. Now the Jordan is at flood stage all during harvest. Yet, as soon as the priests who carried the Ark reached the Jordan and their feet touched the water's edge, the water from upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap at a great distance away in a town called Aram in the vicinity of Zarethan, while the water flowing down to the Sea of Arabah, that's the Dead Sea, was completely cut off. So the people crossed over opposite Jericho. The priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stopped in the middle of the Jordan and stood on dry ground, while all the Israelites passed by until the whole nation had completed the crossing on dry ground. See, God makes a way where there was no way. How do you get a couple of moving from one side of the Jordan to the other? If you left it to me, I'd still be there trying to figure it out. But not with the Lord. You see, when the Lord does something, or when he says something, it happens. And it's no surprise, is it? When you think about who the Lord is, the creator of heaven and the earth, the one who made everything from nothing, the one who holds the waters of the earth in the palm of his hand, the one who says to the mighty waves, this far and no more, the one who says to the raging seas and storms, be still, and they're still. Well, when you've got that God, it's no surprise that the Jordan River was cut off and the people walk by on dry ground. It's not a surprise at all. I think one of the reasons people struggle with miracles in the Bible, miracles like this, is because they don't have a grasp of who the God is we serve. They don't see that he's the Lord of heaven and earth, the one who's in control of all things, the one who's sovereign over all things. Is anything too hard for the Lord? Well, in chapter 3, we have the Jordan River miracle. God made a way for his people to enter into the promised land. When there appeared to be no way, God made a way. Then in chapter 4, we're told to reflect on it, to think about it, to teach it. See, as we turn to chapter 4, the people were instructed to remember the Lord's mighty miracle. They're to do this by remembering that the Lord did the impossible. They're to do this by teaching it to their children. See, if you want to get something stuck in your head, the best way to get something stuck in your head is to teach it. Because you're forced to think about it, know it so well that you're able to teach it to other people. And that's what we see in Joshua chapter 4. Joshua commands 12 men to go and get a stone each from the Jordan River. And Joshua, he sets up these stones as a sign, as a memorial in Gilgal. Gilgal is in the promised land. The reason he does this is chapter 4, verse 6. It's so, in the future, when your children ask you, what do these stones mean? Tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever. See what Joshua is saying? He's saying parents are to be involved in teaching their children about the Lord's mighty miracle. And we find exactly the same thing in verses 19 and 24. It says, on the 10th day of the first month, the people went up from the Jordan and camped at Gilgal on the eastern border of Jericho. And Joshua set up at Gilgal the 12 stones they had taken out of the Jordan. He said to the Israelites, in the future, when your descendants ask their parents, what do these stones mean? We'll tell them, Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the Jordan before you until you had crossed over. The Lord your God did to the Jordan what he'd done to the Red Sea when he dried it up before us until we had crossed over. He did this so all the people of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful and so that he might always fear the Lord your God. See, we're given more details in this section, but the idea is still exactly the same. Parents are to be involved in teaching their children about the Lord's mighty miracles. So what does the Lord want us to teach our children? Well, the first one's obvious, that the Lord made a way to get into the promised land when there was no way. He parted the Jordan River so that God's people could get in, so God's people could go across on dry ground. But there's something else, isn't there? Look at verse 19. It says, on the 10th day of the first month, the people went up from the Jordan and camped at Gilgal on the eastern border of Jericho. What a momentous day. On the 10th day of the first month, God's people set up camp in the promised land. But did you know the 10th day of the first month is a significant day? It's a really important day because of another event. Does anyone have any idea what it may be? What's significant about the 10th day of the first month? All right, I'll help you. Sorry? Passover, that's right. Someone must preach through Exodus a while ago. In Exodus chapter 12, verses 1 to 3, we're told, the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, this month is to be for you the first month of your year. Tell the whole community of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, each man is to take a lamb for his family. You see, we've got there mentioned Passover. That's what this lamb is. On the 10th day of the first month, they're to go select a Passover lamb. Now, later on, this Passover lamb was going to be slaughtered and the blood placed over the doorframe of the house so that all who trust in him would be saved. And God was going to use this event to free his people from slavery, to free his people from Egypt. He was going to do the same thing as he did to the Jordan, to the Red Sea. He'd cut it off. They'd walk through on dry ground. You see, the 10th day of the first month is a significant day because God's people were freed from slavery and they were brought into the promised land. Back in Exodus, God's people were freed from slavery because of the Passover lamb, that miracle the Lord did. And now here on the 10th day of the first month, they camp in the promised land, in Gilgal. What a significant day the first day, or the 10th day of the first month is. And God says to his people, remember it. Remember that day. Remember how God saved you from slavery in Egypt and delivered you into the promised land. He says, parents, you ought to be involved in teaching your children about the Lord's mighty miracle. And the best way to do that is to teach it. The best way to remember is to teach it. Now, one of the things we do at Children's Church is we teach memory verses. Now, over the last couple of terms, Rob Big, he's been teaching the memory verses. Now, I select the memory verse for Rob to teach. But if I'm honest, I don't remember it. I don't remember the memory verse that's been taught. And Becky did it at the 9 o'clock service. Now, it's nothing about Rob or Becky the way they've done it, because they've done a great job. They've done it faithfully. They've taught it well. But I think the reason why I don't remember is because I didn't have to teach it. I didn't have to have it drilled into my head. And because it wasn't drilled into my head, I forgot it because I didn't have to teach it. See, to teach about God's mighty miracles, it needs to be stuck into your head. See, Joshua wants the Israelites to have rocks in your head. Usually it's a bad thing to have rocks in your head, but in this case, it's a good one. You've got to have 12 rocks to be precise. Joshua says, remember it. Remember God's mighty miracle. Remember how God saved you from slavery in Egypt and delivered you into the promised land. Remember what God has done. See, in Joshua 3 and 4, the Israelites had to slow down and remember the Lord's mighty miracle. But we're not Israel. We're not camped on the edge of Canaan. So what do we do with these chapters? What do we do with chapter 3 and chapter 4? Well, we look ahead to a greater Joshua. We look ahead to a better Passover lamb. We look ahead to the complete rest that's found in the Lord Jesus Christ, who performed for us the greatest miracle when he died and rose again. See, one of the greatest miracles, I think, is how God gives life to dead human beings. How God brings us to trust in, to know and love and follow Jesus. And God has given us ways to remember that. We talk about them as means of grace, ways that God has made possible for us to remember what he has done. He's given us quite a few. I'm just going to mention a couple. Firstly, the Bible is a means of grace. As we open up the Bible, you can't help but be reminded about what the Lord has done. You can't help but read Joshua 3 and 4 and see, wow, that's Jesus in the end, the one who does that. And as we open up the Bible each and every day, we're reminded about the Lord's mighty miracles. One of the great privileges I think I have as a parent is I get the opportunity to get this stuck in my head by teaching it to my children. So for those who are parents here today, are you setting aside regularly time to teach your children about the Lord's mighty miracles? Are you being deliberate in how you're doing it? Showing examples of what it means to read the Bible well, to see how it points to Jesus. Now, maybe you're sitting here and I look around. Some of you aren't parents. Some of you don't have children at home. What about you? Are you making the most of the means of grace that God has given to you? Are you picking up your Bible? Are you reading it? Are you thinking about what the Lord has done? Because if you don't read the Bible, you're not going to remember what God has done. The same for youth and young people. You've gone on holidays now. This is a perfect time to set aside time to get into good habits of reading the Bible, to remember what the Lord has done. And I'm sure you've got heaps of questions about the Bible. This is my one piece of advice for you. Ask Dad. Ask your mum and dad, what does this mean? Because that's going to help your mum and dad know what's in the Bible. And it's going to help them remember it and teach it to one another. So if you're sitting there thinking, hey, oh, I don't know what's in the Bible, ask your mum and dad, what is it that's being taught here? What does it mean? So sorry, parents, just dobbed you in deliberately. Another means of grace that the Lord's given us is called the sacraments. We have two of them. We have baptism and the Lord's Supper. Every week when we have the Lord's Supper, aren't we reminded that Jesus died for our sins, that he rose again, that one day he will return? Isn't that the Lord's greatest miracle? Isn't that the one he wants us to remember? Isn't that the one he's given us a remembrance meal? And as we partake in that meal, the Spirit works within us to love and appreciate and follow Jesus more and more. One of the great things we have is it goes in the announcements 2 weeks before we have the Lord's Supper. That gives us time to examine ourselves. How am I going with the Lord? Am I remembering what Jesus has done for me? And also gives parents opportunity to sit down with their children. Hey, in a couple of weeks' time, we're going to have the Lord's Supper. This is what it means. Remember how Jesus died, rose again, and now he will return again. It's an opportunity to teach our children. Baptism's another one. We see in baptism a person dies to sin and rises again with the Lord. These are means of grace that the Lord has given us. We see also he's given us prayer as a means of grace. Why can we come before the Lord in prayer? Because of what Jesus has done. The only reason we can come to God is because through Jesus' death and resurrection, he's opened a way for us to come to him. Shouldn't we use these means of grace to remember what the Lord has done? And lastly, well, this isn't the last one, this is the fourth one I just want to say. Each other. We can help each other to follow, to remember, to love Jesus. So you can help each other as we go to church on Sunday, when we go to growth groups through the week, as we open up the Bible together. We're helping each other to remember, hey, remember God's most mighty miracle, the death and resurrection of his Son. We help each other to do that. See, these are simple ways that the Lord has given us to help us remember who he is. So what do you do? How do you go about remembering what the Lord has done for you? Maybe that's a question you could ask each other during morning tea. What do you do to deliberately remember what the Lord has done for you? What do you do to remember the Lord's mighty miracle? Now, Julie and myself, we have a book, a diary thing, and each year we write down some things, good things, bad things that have happened throughout the year. And at the end of each year, we sit down, we open it up, and we read through it and say, hey, check out this. Remember how this happened, and then this happened, and this happened? They're good reminders of what the Lord has done for us. What do you do to remember? There's some elderly people here who have been around a bit longer than most of us. Maybe you could ask them, what do you do to remember the Lord's faithfulness? What do you do to remember what Jesus has done for you? As I said before, one of the best ways to remember is to teach. Now, I'm going to give a shameless plug right here. We have children's church during the school terms. Some of you do teach children's church. That's great. Great encouragement. What about others? Do other people get to think, hey, maybe I could serve there and teach the children about what God has done for us? Maybe that's you. Come have a chat to me. What about religion in the schools? There's a door open at the moment for us to be able to go into the schools and share the good news of Jesus. Now, I'll tell you, it's one of the hardest jobs I've done. Sometimes I walk away and I'm grateful it was only half an hour lesson. But you know what? As I sit down and teach the children, that means that I've had to get what God has done into my head, and I win because I get to remember what God has done. And you'd win too because you get to remember what the Lord has done for us. So there are just a couple of ways we can be involved in teaching what God has done because it helps us remember. So what do you do to remember the Lord's mighty miracles? I shared at the start about the guys for getting that $20 plug, cost them a $30,000 boat. Forgetfulness can be costly. Jesus is the most precious thing we have. Forgetting him can be too costly. Don't forget who Jesus is. Each week, it's worth slowing down. Slowing down, taking the time to remember who Jesus is and what he's done for it. Because forgetting can be costly.